to the Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the show, and we are into hour number two of the Big Show, live from the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio in Calgary. It's Will Nault and Logan Gordon along with you. Week three in the CFL gets going tonight. 5:30 kickoff in Montreal as the Owls host the Riders, an 0-2 team welcoming a 2-0 team. Tomorrow night, Winnipeg at home to Hamilton. Same situation there, 2-0, 0-2. And the same situation on Saturday as the Stampeders are in action against the Edmonton Elks. I can't remember the last time we had a early season Battle of Alberta like this, but we're getting one in week three, and we'll have it Saturday afternoon at McMahon, a 5 o'clock kickoff. Some interesting questions from Calgary Stampeder practice today as well. And for the latest on that and a whole lot more, it is a pleasure to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in, good friend of the program, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, pro surfer now. He is otherwise known as CFL insider Justin Dunk. JD, what's up, buddy?
Dude, I love your intros. I hope they never stop, man. I appreciate you.
What's going on, big man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Actually coming to you live from downtown Toronto at the Sportsnet headquarters here, just about ready to hop on with Timmy McAuliffe on Tim and Friends at about 6:20, 6:30 Eastern time. So what's
that's
that?
Right.
4:20, 4:30 out
that's
there.
Right. That's
in
right.
In a workout, man, you're cutting into my workout time. That's how much I like you guys, okay?
Well, you got the AirPods in, get the bicep curls mid-question. It's all good, baby. It's all good. Love
yeah.
it. Get that makeup in there, and let's get in there with Timmy and the boys. Love it. Thanks for making some time, as always, man. I guess just very general and broad to kick things off, your thoughts on the first 2 weeks of this season?
Overall, honestly, it's a great start for the CFL. There's been some entertaining football. Yes, there's been periods where there's kind of been some inconsistent play, but overall, the quality has been high. I think the preseason certainly helped that, and we've had some entertaining games that have gone down to the wire, and maybe none better yet than Calgary's 24-point comeback on the road in Hamilton with Bo Levi Mitchell wanting to flip a couple birds.
Today. Yeah. Man, and we were talking about that, actually, and you'd be a good guy to kind of weigh in on it, putting you on the spot a little bit. But, like, that's got to be one of the greatest regular season comebacks of all time, no?
Since I've been covering the league, which isn't super long, but certainly the last decade in the regular season, it is, man. It looked like the Stamps were going to lose that game for sure. And then as it went along there, especially as the Ticats built that lead, you wondered, all right, are they going to go to Jake Mayer here? Is this where he comes in? Maybe gets a little bit of positive momentum going for Calgary and then starts the next week. But no. Bo Levi Mitchell took full advantage of turnovers from Dane Evans, and away we go.
Well, and the Stampeders, as a result, are 2-0, but maybe we can continue that train here in a second. We'll talk about Bo Levi Mitchell and the Stamps as we continue here on the program today. But I want to start with tonight's game as the Riders in Montreal to face the Owls. And I honestly, going into the year, not sure if it was at the top of the list for me, and I think it's been a surprise for, you know, quite a few people. But this front seven, I mean, the Riders have 13 sacks. Nobody else has 5. I mean, this is a scary good front seven. What's impressed you about Saskatchewan, and maybe more importantly, that defense?
First of all, the players on the field, led by A.C. Leonard, who I think is one of the most underrated defenders in the league. But there needs to be more talk about Jason Shivers and what he's done with this unit. There's some guys there that have been developed, like a Pete Robertson, that have become flat-out monsters off the edge that I think not a lot of people are talking about and should focus on. Yes, Charleston Hughes is there, and he's been used in spot pass rush duty. He won't be on the field tonight, though. They're going to rest him because he's dealing with some elbow and shoulder soreness, which I think is a smart move, by the way, on a short week. But that defense, in my mind, really has been schemed up by Shivers in a great way, and they've moved on from guys like Ed Gainey in the back end and haven't really missed a beat, and it hasn't hurt them yet this season. He's developed some other guys like Roland Milligan in the back end to take over. Edom, has been the constant there in the secondary. And that linebacking core with Darnell Sankey, the former Stampeder, has been dynamite.
You got anything on the Riders defense, Logan?
It's just they've looked really, really good. You're right, Dunk. It's hard to disagree with what you've seen from 2 weeks from them, and they, you know, tightened it up against Edmonton enough time to close that off for their second win of the year. They've looked really good, all things considered.
Yeah, definitely, and we're going to see if they can keep it going, guys. Like, I mean, that's the key with the Riders. I think some people had some questions about the offensive line. They didn't necessarily address that in the way some people wanted to in the offseason. Now we're going to see how that depth is with Dan Clark out for the foreseeable future with a fractured fibula. But that defense really has carried the day in my mind, even though Cody Fajardo gets all the headlines.
Yeah, and I was going to say, another big key, of course, of this team, and it's still early in the year. We'll see how tonight goes for the offense in terms of the Riders. But, you know, all the talk was Cody Fajardo, and could we get more of 2019 Fajardo as opposed to 2021 Fajardo, where, you know, again, he still had some pretty decent numbers, but turned the ball over a lot, just had 14 touchdowns in 13 games. He's getting headlines early, as you mentioned, Dunk, but kind of well-deserved, and obviously we know how important the quarterback position is in the CFL.
For sure, and it's deserved on offense because he's been really efficient, put 30 on the board against the stout Hamilton Tiger Cats defense at home to start the season. Looks like he's got a great rapport now with Duke Williams, even though Williams missed week two, the win over Edmonton. And the key for me with Fajardo for these first couple games, especially in Edmonton late in that ballgame, was making a play for his team to win the game. Chris Jones schemes up a blitz there late in the fourth quarter. There's a free rusher. Fajardo spins out of the pocket, finds Mitch Pickton wide open. And I get that some people might think, oh, well, that's an easy touchdown. But when you're facing that pressure, to do what Fajardo did so calmly shows me that, and I hate this in a way because it's a cliche, but the game's slowing down for him and he can step up and make the critical plays when you need them. That's what we're used to seeing from Bo Levi Mitchell over the years, and the reason that Calgary has been that team that you always have to compete with to get to that number one spot in the West.
Speaking of quarterbacks, it's an interesting situation going on in Montreal right now, Dunk, and I'm curious if you see it the same way I do. It feels like a good start from Trevor Harris against the Saskatchewan Roughriders might open the door a bit more for him to maybe take that starting role away from Vernon Adams Jr.
Oh, yeah, it definitely could. And I felt like this is the way that it could go when Harris re-signed there in the offseason, because Trevor Harris is a very calculated individual, and he was going to go to the team where he felt like it was the best opportunity to get back into that starting role. There was some talk of him maybe going elsewhere. You know, there were some murmurs, possibly the Toronto Argonauts, and a lot of people thought he would go to BC to be the backup for Nathan Rourke because of his ties to Rick Campbell. But Harris knew that they were going to give Rourke a long runway in BC, as they should, you know, based on the first week that Rourke had. So it was a smart move by Harris to go there. And I think Harris knew that he was more the type of quarterback that Danny Machocha likes. Machocha won a Grey Cup with Ricky Ray, who was an accurate pocket passer. Well, that's very much the same what Harris is. He hasn't won as many Grey Cups as Ray, and by no means am I comparing the two, but Harris is similar to that type of quarterback that Machocha likes, and in reality, that's who is pulling the strings here, and I think that's why that move was made so early in the game in Toronto. Vernon Adams Jr. didn't look terrible. He only had a couple series. Like, he barely got a chance to get going in that game, and all of a sudden, out comes the hook. Machocha's on the sideline, and in goes Trevor Harris.
Well, and it's interesting you mentioned that with Danny Machocha, because Kari Jones isn't Machocha's guy, and when you have somebody that has that coaching experience, it kind of feels like an awkward spot to be in for Kari Jones, especially if he doesn't start to get some results and probably add some wins for this Montreal team.
You know, I don't even know if results are going to do it, to be quite honest.
Yeah, like, it kind of feels that way.
Exactly. It looks like it's just like a situation where it's a matter of time where Machocha is going to pick his spot, whether that's after these back-to-back games with a tough Saskatchewan team or later in the season or at the end of the year. Because you look at Montreal, they go on the road, battle Calgary tough in that opening game, lose by three. And then if David Côté doesn't miss a field goal, they're 1-1, and they probably should have won that game, even though I don't think really the Alouettes played exceptionally well. So it's not like Montreal has been terrible, but I said at the start of the season, if you can find a prop bet out there for first coach fired, it's going to be Jones in my mind, not having anything to do with what he actually does and how he guides that team, just because Machocha is setting it up for either him to be the coach or for him to bring in his guy. It's so clear to me.
He won't be there in attendance tonight because, unfortunately, just tested positive for COVID. But what have you made of new Alouettes owner Gary Stern and what he's sort of done early on in this season? And how curious are you to see what the turnout is in Montreal tonight?
Did he say they were going to kill Saskatchewan, or is that just week two?
Well, he didn't use that word again. I think he wanted to kind of retract that after he said it. But he all but guaranteed a win on Twitter, for whatever that means. Coming from Gary Stern, it seems like he's kind of unlocked his loose lips here, which is honestly great. Like, he's already got up to over 3,000 followers on Twitter really quickly, and he started with not even having a profile picture, and I don't think really knowing how to operate on there, but good on him. He's putting it out there, and I think this is what the league needs, right? More transparency, more honesty, and he gets that this type of thing is going to sell the game and ultimately put more bums in seats and hopefully get more people engaged in the product.
Well, and it's kind of been a common theme around the CFL this year that I've started to be really impressed with. I'm sure you've noticed it as well, not just with Stern, but you have Victor Cooey in Edmonton as their, you know, CEO and president. He's been doing a lot. The new BC Lions owner, Amar Doman, and his, you know, work to get 30,000 plus in there for week one of the BC Lions. It's nice to see some of these guys taking on more of that responsibility, Duncan, having a more public face in, you know, trying to get these teams to have success on and off the field.
It definitely is. You look at all those guys, they've been very front-facing and have talked to a lot of fans themselves and have been open about wanting to make it a situation where they want fans to be treated properly. Now, for better or for worse, David Braley helped the CFL survive and own two teams, but there are people that tell you he didn't put a nickel in the marketing for the BC Lions for the end of his tenure owning the team, and God rest his soul. But you can see the difference here in the shift and the change in thinking with those franchises in BC, in Edmonton, especially, and we know some of the other ones are strong. And I think this is what Larry Tannenbaum was getting at when he talked about the CFL in some rare public comments and wanting to change the mentality, especially among the community-owned teams. Now, the Saskatchewan Roughriders are going to print money, basically, right? They're as good as gold there in Saskatchewan, but you still got to market your team. You still got to get out there. You can't just stand pat. You need to continue to grow. And I think this is what Tannenbaum was getting at, and we're seeing the impact that Cui and Doman are making on their franchises.
And as Logan and I have talked about this week already, I mean, $5 beers at the concession, I mean, that's how you win young fans, right? Come on.
Yes, sir.
It's brilliant.
Make cheap, get people in the building.
That's right.
You have to have them first engaged with the product. I'm not a marketing or sales expert, but you have to have someone wanting to see your product. And if they're in there even spending $5 on beer, I'm sure they're still making money off that.
He is Justin Dunk, all things CFL for Three Down Nation. Kind enough to give us some time on this Thursday. Week three kicks off tonight in Montreal with the Owls and the Riders. A team that you've covered a lot in your career, Justin, is the Hamilton Ticats. What do you make of the first 2 weeks for Dane Evans? It's been a bit of turnover central over there with the Ticats.
Way too loosey-goosey with the football, man. 4 interceptions, 3 lost fumbles, 4 fumbles total, and a CFL-high 7 turnovers. He's serving them up, yum, 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 for the defenses that he's playing against. So he needs to take care of the football, because if he does that, the Ticats easily beat the Stampeders. And in week one, they would have actually been in the football game in Saskatchewan, even though it's a tough place to play. But to me, that's what stands out. Evans needs to take care of the football better. They have some playmakers, some guys with some burst and some pop. Tim White, Stephen Dunbar Jr. are young, up-and-coming guys. Don Jackson, ideally they would like to get him back at the lineup, but that's more of a ratio thing because he provides that home run hitting ability from the running back position. The defense has been stout. The special teams hasn't failed them. It's, to me, it's on one guy. And you got to be careful if you're Evans, because even though you got over $400,000, there aren't many quarterbacks in this league that are allowed to turn the football over that much and that often and to continue to do it and keep their job. So he needs to make sure he secures that football quickly.
Yeah, and it's only the third game of an 18-game schedule, so by no means is it must win or backs against the wall. But obviously a pretty veteran group, especially on defense in Hamilton. I don't think they're worrying too much yet, but this is a big game on Friday, and obviously facing a Winnipeg team that's 2-0. But what have your early impressions been on Winnipeg, a team that I think has looked at it and said, you know what, we're maybe pretty lucky we're playing Ottawa in the first two games because they you know, give Ottawa credit. They fought hard. But Winnipeg, I think at 2-0, they look at it and say, you know, we need to play a lot better here too.
And they can. The Bombers, in my mind, played about a B in both of those games if I was going to give them a grade, and still won. That's the impressive part to Winnipeg's start and their team overall, is they can play mediocre football by their standards and still go out and get victories and be 2-0. I can tell you that inside the building there, they're not treating it like they're 2-0. They don't feel like that because they've lacked energy and jump, especially off the start. And that's what really jumped out to me, is when they unveiled the banner there at IG Field. It was a packed house. You know, we had fans obviously back in there in full capacity, but there was just no juice from the team. Yeah, they still got the win. They found a way to get it done. And I think that's the key here with Zach Collaros and Adam Big Hill and the veterans that lead that team, is they found a way to get it done in a bit of a different group here. We need to realize that, right? Andrew Harris isn't there, who was one of the vocal leaders for that team, also did it by example. So it's been an impressive start in that way. I know it kind of sounds weird, but the fact that the Blue Bombers can play, you know, B, solid B football and still win is impressive. And if they get it rolling here, then the league better watch out again. I think it'll be a tough test for the Ticats.
Probably the biggest thing that struck me about the Bombers early on, and I'm sure it's something that Mike O'Shea is well aware of, and I'm sure you've noticed it too, Dunk, is, you know, Andrew Harris looked pretty good in week one in Toronto, and it's something that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers weren't really able to get going against Ottawa, was any part of their running game with, you know, Brady Oliveira. And when you lose a guy like Andrew Harris, it's going to be a lot of focus on who you're replacing him with and how much production you're getting out of that position. I'm sure that's going to be a bigger conversation if that doesn't fix itself sooner than later.
It certainly will be. And I think there's a lot of people out there that believe, well, Andrew Harris moves on, you can just stick the next running back in there and they'll be productive. But Harris was so in sync with that offensive line because it had been together for a while. Now, there really wasn't many changes there. It was Drew Desjarlais, who signed a contract with the New England Patriots, going out, and Jeff Gray, a first-round pick of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, going in, the local product. So a little bit of a change there, but it's a different flow. It's a different type of feel when you have different backs in there with Brady Oliveira and Johnny Augustine. So I think they just need some reps together to really get that run game going, because that offensive line has still played relatively well. There maybe hasn't been gaping holes to run through, but they weren't necessarily there for Harris anyways. The timing was precise when he was there, and I think they've done a great job protecting Zach Collaros. So I think the yards will come on the ground for the Bombers in time.
Ahead of the Battle of Alberta at McMahon this weekend, it's been 2 weeks and Chris Jones already looks perturbed, I guess. He doesn't look happy. I'm sure week one wasn't great, but the guy, it doesn't look like he's having the most fun. It's been a tough start for him in his return to Edmonton.
It has, man. And as much as he's looked perturbed, he hasn't been flat out upset and yelling and probably cussing on the sidelines based on what we've seen from the television cameras. And we've seen that from him in the past. And in my mind, that was the difference from Chris Jones starting out in Saskatchewan and now the same thing year one in Edmonton. And when there were expectations with the Rough Riders, when he felt like he had a Grey Cup contending team. So what I'm getting at is with the Elks, I think he saw this coming. I don't think he expected to have 59 points dropped on his defense in week one and get smacked around. But they bounced back, fought hard in week two, went all the way down to the wire there until Cody Fajardo threw what would be the game-winning touchdown. So I think Jones, in a way, you know, he's not going to expect to lose, but he expected some bumps and bruises along the way with this group because it's very new on defense. There were a lot of new faces there when they played BC. They got a little bit healthier, but the veterans in this group are kind of few and far between as he finds the guys that are going to, in his mind, form the basis of especially the defense going forward for Edmonton.
I guess the good news is that Kenny Lawler's looked like he's been worth every penny so far. That's something for Edmonton.
He has been unreal, and that's certainly a positive for Edmonton. Nick Arbuckle and Lawler look like they've developed a connection in training camp and have brought that over into the regular season clearly, and Lawler's making some flat-out wild plays. We all saw that touchdown catch in the back of the end zone where he got a foot down last week to really, I think, energize that whole Elks team and get them in the ball game. So if the defense can play a little bit better, and we saw them play better. We should give them some credit against the Riders, although they didn't have their top target in Duke Williams that game. Then I think the offense can get it going here. James Wilder Jr. has been rather quiet. He's a weapon. And I think getting Mark Corte back, who missed the home opener, I should say, for his wedding, and there were some people kind of wondering if he should have booked it on a different date. But anyways, he missed the game. I think getting him back will help too.
Not sure he would have won that battle with his wife, but it's all good. Speaking of just, you know, that battle of Alberta and shifting gears to the Calgary side, it was obviously a huge moment in the Hamilton game with Dave deciding to stick with Bo Levi Mitchell. And, you know, obviously that's his guy. He's going to stick with him, and it pays off as they have that massive comeback to win. But, JD, everyone's freaking out today in Calgary because Bo Levi Mitchell's got some soreness and did not take first-team reps early season and more injury issues for Bo Levi Mitchell. What's your gut telling you? What are you hearing here from Calgary?
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, still got to dig into it some more, but I think this is just precautionary, right? You remember in training camp, Dave Dickinson and even Bo Levi Mitchell were talking about wanting to maybe rest him a little bit, but Mitchell wanted to go. Like, he wanted to not test his arm, but show that he could get through it all. And in my mind, if it is just soreness, and I think most of the time the Stampeders are fairly forthcoming with that information. They're not trying to be deceptive. Then you do want to rest him. And he is a veteran guy. He's thrown a lot of balls, and it's not like he necessarily needs to throw a ton to get ready to face Edmonton either. So we'll see. If he's out again, then that's probably going to lead to Jake Mayer starting the game in terms of missing practice tomorrow. But we'll see how it shakes down.
And, of course, as a veteran guy, I don't think everyone's too worried if he doesn't have a lot of reps in practice and can just step in there and get things done in the game. I don't know if anyone's worried about that. And it also sounds like good news on the injury front when it comes to the running back situation, because a little bit scary there with what happened in Hamilton with both Kadeem Carey and with Logan. But it sounds like Kadeem's going to be good to go in week three.
It does sound like that. And Charlie Power was playing the bulk of that game at the end, at least. And Dickinson said post game, he's like, I had a talk with Orlando Steinhauer after the game, and he wasn't really respecting our run game, and you could tell. But that made Mitchell's performance even more impressive. No disrespect to Charlie Power, of course, he's a great fullback and does the grunt work, but he's not as explosive as Kadeem Carey.
He was a big story heading into the year, Justin. He blew the doors off in game one. What are we expecting for an encore Saturday night in Vancouver with quarterback Nathan Rourke?
Ooh, what's setting up to look nice for Rourke, right? He drops 59 points on that Chris Jones defense, who has given young starting quarterbacks fits in the past, looked very efficient, threw the ball down the field a little bit, didn't force anything in my mind. That was really the thing that stood out to me, and also used his legs as a weapon. He didn't use his legs to escape too early from the pocket. He used them as a weapon, which is a real key difference for quarterbacks, and it looks like Rourke is comfortable. I think the game has slowed down for him. Now he's going to have to prove he can do it in a week-in, week-out basis. He's 2-0 as a starter against Edmonton, but he's got to start beating some of the rest of the teams in the league, although he's never faced them, right? He's only had one other start against Saskatchewan. So I think it's an ideal situation for him. He gets week one. They have the bye week. They can reassess some things and look at how they wanted to attack Toronto, and I think he'll be ready. He's got weapons there, and it seems like he's got that great rapport carried over from 2021 into this season with Lucky Whitehead, who might be the most explosive player in the league right now.
Yeah, and the guy who's not talked about, I don't think, enough in terms of how dynamic and explosive he can be in Lucky Whitehead. And, man, 26 for 29, that kid was unbelievable in week one. We'll see what week three has to present. And a pretty fun matchup, JD. I'm not sure what you thought about Toronto in week one, but it's a pretty fun matchup to close out week three in the CFL.
It is a fun one. I mean, Toronto was all right. I definitely think they could have played better and won that football game easily against Montreal, and I'm sure they're thinking the same because it got a little bit sloppy, and McLeod Bethel-Thompson needs to be better in some of his reads, and even he admitted that. And even though they won, they felt like they lost because they felt like David Cote should have made that kick. So they're 1-0. It's a much better feeling to be that way instead of losing, but the Argos know they got to play better football. I think they'll be contenders in the East, but it's always been difficult, especially for Toronto, for whatever reason, going all the way out there to BC and trying to deal with the time zone change. So we'll see how Ryan Dinwiddie gives it a shot.
Last one for me, Justin, over the last weekend, of course, the Stamps and Ticats game was the Hall of Fame game to honor the last two classes that we didn't get to celebrate due to COVID. And now we have the names of the five players and three builders who will join the class of 2022. What have you? What did you make of the class? And I guess, do you have any memories specific for Ricky Ray or Chip Cox, Paul McCallum, Roy Shivers? There's some pretty great names in this 2022 class.
I can't believe Ricky Ray's the first ballot hall. That's a joke. I mean, come on. Obviously, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, everyone. Relax. Relax.
I knew you were, Willie. I know you that well. But, man, honestly, Ray sticks out to me because when I was watching the CFL as a youngster, there was Flutie in 96, 97 with the Argos, and he seemed like this superhero, Mighty Mouse kind of a player. And then Ricky Ray came out of nowhere. I think it was in the early 2000s with Edmonton as a rookie and started doing things that hadn't been done for a while for a guy that was in his first year in the CFL as a quarterback. And, of course, that patented corner out and just slinging the rock all over the field. He was so fun to watch early in his career. The connection I remember that he had with Jason Tucker was so dynamic. And I remember watching, you know, Wendy's Friday Night Football way back in the day. And it was kind of must-see TV when Ray was starting to light up the league, to be quite honest.
Man, he was a lot of fun to watch and pretty impressive that, you know, the job he did both obviously in Edmonton for a long time, people in the city know, and then obviously what he did in Toronto. Had success against Calgary at every stop of his career. And yes, hats off to him for a legendary career. And also shout out to Chip Cox, a first-time first ballot Hall of Famer, as well as the longtime Alouette linebacker is going to be in the Hall in 2022. Justin, great stuff, man. Appreciate the time. As always, we'll let you get back to the gym, and we'll look for you on television coming up in about 90 minutes' time. Thanks, pal.
Yes, sir. You know it. Great to warm up with you guys.
There it is. Justin Dunk, Three Down Nation, CFL Insider, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. This hotline going to get a workout in hour two. We'll go right back down at some more football talk, maybe some golf talk mixed in as well. A man who's never shy on opinions. We'll spin it around next on hour number two with a man very familiar to this radio station and this market. All as we continue on hour two, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome back to a rainy downtown Calgary inside the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. My name is Will Nault alongside Logan Gordon. Big Show rolls on. Hour number two is underway. Don't forget you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now. Never miss a moment or a guest. Listen on demand. Each hour posted shortly after they conclude. And right now, right back down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. This is it's been a lot of football talk, and we're going to continue that to momentum right now down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. A man who's never short on opinions and really is a great friend of the program. He is the one and only Rod Peterson from the Rod Peterson Show. RP, how are you, pal?
Will, the thrill. Whew, I'm glad. I figured you wanted to talk CFL and football, but I wasn't sure. So
well,
I tweeted that.
You're a man of many talents, many hats. We can really go anywhere. And as I say, you're never shy in opinion. I can throw anything at you and you will react. And maybe let's start here then. We will talk CFL. We will certainly get there. But I know it was probably a big topic on your show. It's been a big topic on our show, of course. Did you have any issue with the overtime winner last night?
No. I say it is. It's a matter of a perspective here, and if I was John Cooper in the Lightning, I would be very upset that they very clearly had six skaters on the ice. But it was not a great night for officiating in the National Hockey League. And the first goal, I think, was credited to Tampa Bay. Probably shouldn't have counted either. I think the hockey gods in the end even things out. And I think John Cooper, whom I love, he graduated with my brother, same class, Notre Dame College, 1986. Very smart guy. Was being a bit of a drama queen after the game last night.
And kind of, I think, creating a bit of an us against the world mentality, trying to change the public perception and the narrative. And, you know, I'll give him a lot of credit. He's a fabulous coach and certainly look like a man and a coach who I think, not admitting defeat, but certainly knows the you know, absolute mountain his team has now got to climb.
Well, I'll tell you what, the two coaches that probably give the most must-see post-game news conferences is A, yours, Daryl Sutter, B, John Cooper.
I mean, in these Stanley Cup playoffs, when they lost to the Leafs, when they got down 2-1 in the series, what did John say? We're not even giving them a game. We can't even talk about how well they're playing because we're not even trying out there. Like, yes, John's news conferences are always a message to his own dressing room versus, I think, than anybody else. But again, Nazem Kadri wasn't checked coming into the zone last night. It wasn't a good goal on Vasilevsky. Nobody's talking about that. There was a lot of mistakes made all over the ice on the game winner in overtime, but it's just easier to point the finger at the referees. But again, it was a botch, and I see the analysts saying this is not a good look on the NHL, and it's not, but it's clearly not going to change. As long, Will, as there's human involvement in officiating, there's going to be mistakes happen. And I think basically coming out of this, it's poor John Cooper, sucks to be you. If you're in his shoes, you'd feel the same way, but we're not. So go try and win a game in Denver and keep this thing alive and play better.
Yeah. And I said to Lou in hour number one, this is always, and it doesn't matter if it's hockey, football, baseball, whatever. I think what makes sport great, or part of it for me anyways, is the fact that you're going to get calls that maybe don't go your way always and go against you or go for you. It's just part of what sport is. It's the human element, and it's why sports to me is the, you know, great live theater that it is, because you have those situations that maybe don't always go your way. And yeah, it leads to great debates and great topics and great opinions, but I think it's what makes sport great myself.
Oh, yeah. That's why we all watch every night, right? And the ebbs and flows absolutely do even out. And I'm sure you probably talked about this. I haven't listened to your program today. I've been out in Canmore. I listened on the drive. Certainly enjoyed the Danny Austin interview yesterday, by the way, immensely. But yes, it's like you say, it's the reason that we tune in, and you're going to get the breaks some nights and you're not others. But some people were chiming in on my show today was it's a little rich to see John Cooper complaining about how tough it is to win in the salary cap era, given what his team pulled off last year with the Kucherov situation.
No doubt. Logan, so
maybe the hockey universe is getting John packed big time here. I don't know.
No doubt. The hockey gods are out in full force. Logan, you want to throw your Kadri 3 at Rod? I'd be curious where Peterson stands on this one.
Well, we just had a conversation earlier, Rod, about, you know, Nazem Kadri and the great year he's had with the Colorado Avalanche. And I'm not saying it's probable or even plausible, but I would be taking a long look if I was Joe Sakic at my books this offseason to see just what I could do to keep number 91 in Avs silks going forward. Again, I understand they have massive priorities, and it probably starts in goal with Darcy Kemper needing a new contract and whether they want to commit to him. But I've just been so impressed with how he's been able to turn his game, you know, into something next level from what we saw from him as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs, that I would be, you know, trying my very best to try to get him back next year, as difficult as that might be.
Well, Joe knows that. Joe's won championships at every level, certainly as a player, and he's proven to be just as good as a general manager. And Joe understands what a gamer is, and that's Nazem Kadri. He is a little bit of high risk, high reward. He's probably going to be suspended every Stanley Cup playoff, but he's going to be worth the wait. You know, and, you know, he has tended to be a little bit injury prone. But as you saw last night and you see in big games, Nazem Kadri rises to the moment. There's some other guys that you didn't notice for Colorado last night. There was a lot of players for Tampa Bay you did not notice. You always remember Nazem Kadri. And he's more of a playoff performer than a regular season performer, obviously. And I would think the Leafs have been kicking themselves ever since they let him go. So, yeah, he's a priority signing for the Colorado Avalanche, no doubt. Obviously, they're saying, let's win this thing, let's get it over with and reassess. But he's a big reason why they're going to win it.
What did you make of Paul Maurice being named the next head coach of the Florida Panthers and sort of that situation with Andrew Brunette, who finished second behind Daryl Sutter and Jack Adams voting, but wasn't chosen to be the guy to lead that team going forward?
Well, like everybody, caught off guard that Paul Maurice was going to Florida. You know, there was a bit of a talk that maybe he wasn't going to coach at all after what happened in Winnipeg. But he's looked very proudly upon his 9 seasons in Winnipeg. I believe they made the playoffs, if not every year, then just about every year. But you knew, like I spent most of the winter in Florida. I was at just about every Panthers game. It was a very awkward situation for the Panthers all year. They didn't want to make Joel Quenneville step down, but clearly they had to. Andrew Burnett just happened to be sitting there as the top assistant coach. They weren't going to bring anybody else in. And he did a great job in coaching them to the President's Trophy. But people were asking me, in terms of viewers, you know, what does Bruno have to do to keep this job? And it was go on a Stanley Cup run. And to be honest, they did not even show up in round two against Tampa. Weren't even close. I was at those games. That's what cost them his job. And sit back and say, would Joel Quenneville have made a difference if he was on the bench? Yes, he absolutely would have. He won three Stanley Cups with the Chicago Blackhawks. Joel would have made a huge difference. That was Bruno's chance to shine, and unfortunately it didn't happen. I assume he learned a lot from the experience, but he was never going to be brought back after they did a face plant and were swept by Tampa Bay in round two. Now, I was kind of hoping maybe Barry Trotz might have been kicking some tires there in Florida, but that wasn't the case. The one thing you're asking, Logan, my thoughts, well, initially the fans in Florida were excited, my friends down there and some of the media, but 24 hours later, they're not as excited. They're looking at his resume saying, this guy's never won anywhere. That's a bit of the America thought process, right? If you're not first, you're last. And it's, well, the guy's coached 1,000 games. He's won almost 1,000, but no, he's never won a Stanley Cup. So it's not entirely going over with 100% support in South Florida, but I think it's a great hire. You got to win a first one sometime, and he's taken over perhaps the most talented team in the league, certainly in the Eastern Conference.
You mentioned Barry Trotz in that conversation, and it sure feels as though Winnipeg, Paul Maurice's former stomping grounds, are putting on a full court press for him to try to be their next head coach. My biggest worry in all of this, Rod, is, you know, I don't think Barry Trotz needs to coach this year by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm kind of the opinion lately that the Winnipeg Jets, in my mind, might be putting too many eggs in one basket here, because I'm not sure what the fallout plan is for them if Barry Trotz doesn't decide to become the next head coach of the Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, you're right. Every egg is in that basket. And as a matter of you, I don't know how close you are to the Winnipeg fan base, but that entire city has got their hopes so high that if they don't get Barry Trotz, anybody else is going to be a massive disappointment. But honestly, I can't see who it is. I talked to friends of Mike Babcock yesterday. Babs isn't in the running there. He's going back to the University of Saskatchewan next year. There's still a lot of great coaches out there, but only one name to Barry Trotz. And Barry's a former captain of the Regina Pats. His agent is a very close friend of mine. They are saying nothing about where this is leading. And I know it's got a lot of Jets fans on pins and needles, but I just can't see him going anywhere else. He doesn't need to coach, but let's remember this. Left Washington after winning the Stanley Cup, spurned, and his feelings were hurt, went to the Islanders, did great things there, fired there. I don't think Trotz wants to take a year off. I know these coaches well. You guys know these coaches well. He wants to be back on a bench this season. So what I think is they're working out a very intricate deal with the Winnipeg Jets, and at the end of it all, he is going to be the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. But they have talked to every team. Like, I know that for a fact. He interviewed with every team, and he's had his choice. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be in Winnipeg, which is basically his hometown team, too. It's too perfect of a fit. I don't really know what's taking along other than it's going to be, I think, a very intricate deal.
I think he's debating which kind of beer he wants from that brewery. I think that's what he's debating. Rod Peterson joins us from the Rod Peterson Show. The big show rolls on. Hour number two is live and underway here on Sportsnet 960. Talking a little hockey. We'll get to CFL here in a little bit. But anything else that, you know, a lot of people, I think, yes, the Cup Final has been fun, and I think we all expect now the Avalanche to win this thing, Rod. But there's a lot of storylines that I think are going to be fun to watch in this NHL offseason, and you spent a lot of time in this city along with Florida the last, you know, handful of months. What does your gut tell you about Gaudreau and Tkachuk and the Calgary Flames?
Well, they have to bring them back. I mean, they're the straw that stirs the drink, and believe me, obviously the Flames have had their share of playoff heartbreaks. You know, you would hope this was one final lesson learned, but I think that they're going to do whatever it takes to get those guys signed and move the money around, and this was a major learning lesson for the Calgary Flames. Listen, I felt it like everybody else. I predicted or really hoped for a Florida-Calgary Stanley Cup final. I was going to be in both places. When it didn't happen in either, I was pretty devastated. And I was watching this Edmonton series from Florida. The way it ended, I didn't hear from Calgary for a couple of weeks. I'm like, is Calgary still there? Like, oh my God, I can't imagine what it was like to be in this city when they lost out. So I think the Flames eventually, obviously, are going to be fine after, and I would assume they're over that loss. I would hope so. But they still want a pennant. They're, you know, you're either, Will, you're going one of two directions in life, forwards or backwards, and the Flames are going forwards. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but they're obviously they're one of the best teams in the NHL. You know, potentially top five. They'll be fine coming back. They do have to get those guys signed in, but they know it. They'll get it done.
It'll be fun to watch, and it'll be an awesome offseason, I think, across the NHL. It's what makes this league best, some of the player movement, the salary cap era, all things considered. It'll be a fun offseason to watch, but we wait first on Game 5 of the Stanley Cup, Friday night back in Denver. Let's talk a little CFL, Rod. Week 3 begins tonight. What's stuck out to you the first 2 weeks of the year? We just talked to Justin Dunk, and you know, of course, you know Dunk very, very well as well. This Saskatchewan team, their front seven, they got 13 sacks already this season. Nobody else has five. That certainly jumps out to a lot of people. But in this city, how can you not talk about that unbelievable come-from-behind win against Hamilton last week?
Absolutely, gentlemen. And at the Rocky Mountain Rotary Celebrity Golf Classic on Monday night, which I emceed at Bears Paw, I singled out Bo for his tremendous play. He even raised his hand and waved to the crowd. It was quite a night. It was quite a moment. I think what stuck out for me is 2 weeks into the season, we still can't tell who's the best team in the CFL yet, because obviously Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, Calgary, all 2-0, BC's unbeaten, right? So we just don't know who's the best team yet. The games have been good. Clearly, Will, you've obviously read the game notes and you saw the Saskatchewan sack total. I've seen that scoring is up 12%. From this point last year, so they clearly feel those rule changes made a big difference, the desired difference. Basically, the football's been good, and that was part of, you know, your discussion with Danny yesterday that I agreed with. It's been entertaining. CFL's always been a great product, and they're off to a great start, but right now I don't think anybody can say who's the best team. For instance, yeah, some people think that Saskatchewan, Montreal could be the Grey Cup combatants in Mosaic November 22nd. I've heard that. And if that were to be the case, then tonight's game at McGill is a Grey Cup preview. There's a reason to watch every game, and I think that's very exciting.
Yeah, and certainly think the bringing back the preseason was huge. I know as fans, we don't necessarily love it, but it allows coaches and players to get everything in place, and I think we're seeing the results of that along with the rule changes, as you mentioned. He was unbelievable in week one. What kind of pressure on Nathan Work Saturday in Vancouver do you think?
I think there's going to be pressure on him for a very long time because of that Canadian moniker. And I think it's cool. It's probably, you know, coming out of week one, it was the best story in the CFL, this Canadian quarterback being player of the week and throwing three touchdowns and rushing for two. Well, I've been around this league a long time, and it wasn't that long ago that the term Canadian quarterback was a swear word. It was like, no. Don't refer to him as being Canadian. Something's changed. And it seems like Canadians, you know, sports fans want a good story, something to latch onto. And I think people are behind Nathan Rourke. But with that comes the pressure of which you speak. And the Lions general managers, as you know, they have co-GMs out there, Neil McAvoy and Rick Campbell. They don't want him referred to as Canadian quarterback. They said if you didn't see his passport, you wouldn't know he was a Canadian quarterback, as if that were some sort of insult. But I think it's a pretty good marketing gimmick. You see what's going on with the crowds and what the owner's doing there. That's a tremendous early season story. But and the other thing about Nathan, I've interviewed him, I've been around him. He's very mature, very level-headed. He's exactly what you want as a quarterback. I don't think the pressure's going to faze him at all. Clearly it didn't in week one. And he's got a Toronto team I heard you guys talk about the other day that shouldn't be 1-0. They got a really good chance to go to 2-0 here at home.
Imagine it was cool in your neck of the woods and, you know, a lot of your audience, too, from Saskatchewan to see that, you know, two pretty prominent members of the Rough Riders would be heading to the 2022 class of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, and Paul McCallum and Roy Shivers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was quite a debate this week. And, of course, I'm watching it all from one province over because we're doing our show from Grey Eagle Resort and Casino. I've been in Calgary, but I've written the columns and they had the commentaries that still air on Saskatchewan radio about Paul and Roy going into the Hall of Fame. Guys, it's a little ridiculous that these guys are going into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, specifically Roy, because of what he accomplished in Saskatchewan, but he's not even in the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Like, that speaks to something that I don't even know what. It speaks to egos, it speaks to grudges, and that's just wrong. In the case, and I just think he should be in the Rider Hall of Fame. First ever black general manager in pro football, hired the first ever black head coach in pro football. That's something that Saskatchewan needs, should be lauded for as trailblazers in the pro football industry, and they don't even recognize it. That's one thing. It's wrong. But with Paul, the 2004 miss, I don't know if you guys are old enough. I assume, I think yeah. You are. 18 yards in the 2004 West Final. That is what Rider
and a gift on the front lawn, baby.
Yeah, and that's what people in Saskatchewan are saying. Some are saying, not everybody, just the bad apples, but saying that's what his legacy is here. And I'm like, no. His legacy is going to the Hall of Fame and his two Grey Cups. And he's actually number two in every kicking stat behind Gabe Ridgeway, like everyone. So, Paul, you know, I've studied this Canadian Football Hall of Fame for years and years and years, hosted a lot of their events. It seems like you need to win two Grey Cups minimum to get into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. Paul's done that. So very worthy guys, two just wonderful CFL personalities, and I applaud them both. But not recognized at Saskatchewan is something that really bothers me.
Well, it's been interesting to hear him sort of talk about it the last couple of days as well, Rod, and to look back, and it certainly sounds like a mature Paul McCallum who's taken his time in Saskatchewan in stride over the years, and maybe he felt differently about it during his CFL career, but it's a guy that certainly seems at peace with it and would like to, you know, maybe have that chapter of his life be something that he can look back on positively. At least that's what I've heard from him since that news came out.
Well, believe me, I was with him side by side, not only when that happened, but for the year afterwards. It's, in retrospect, guys, you look back at these things and go, how did he come back to play another season in Saskatchewan after what happened to his family and in that community? It's shocking that he did. But when you're in it, you don't really think about it. And that, you know, we're talking going back here 16 years or more. Like, unbelievable that he was able to do that. And I saw the interviews with him. I haven't had him on my show, but he said that incident changed him. And those of us that go through traumatic events, you hope to turn it into a positive. For Paul, it was traumatic. And they still talk about it in Saskatchewan. Will just brought up the manure going on his lawn. Very embarrassing moment for the whole province. But you need to talk about these things to get over them, and I'm glad that Paul is.
So you mentioned we kind of glossed over, and I apologize, but when are we going to see number 19 on your chest as you do the show? Like, what's going on there?
I was doing my show live from the Bears Paw the other day, and I will say that one of our staff went up and tapped Bo on the shoulder and said, would you like to go on the show? He said, what show? And they said, the RP show. And Bo said, not an effing chance. Turned and walked away. So
you're trying, the bridge is starting to get built, but it's not quite built yet, is what you're saying.
It's going to be a while, I think. But that's why I singled him out at supper for not only the comeback, but also spending his off day with us as a young father, that he didn't have to do that, but that said the kind of guy that Bo is. Well, make it happen, boys. You'll be the first to know.
Slowly, but surely. any thoughts to the other biggest sports story? I'm sure it's been on your show a bunch as well. We've talked a little bit about it. I think the PGA is doing their best to try and counter it, but what do you make of this battle right now between LIV Golf and the PGA?
Boy, well, evolving. I mean, every single day there's something new. It's just fascinating. And, you know, me getting out of the CFL beat and being able to cover and look at all these sports stories has just been wonderful. And honestly, well, I don't know about you, but I just asked my friends, which side are you on? And it's interesting to get the answers. You know, most,
yep.
You know, right-wingers or business owners, which quite frankly is the people that I hang out with, they all support the players going to LIV Golf. Frankly, but you know, a lot of the people that are still in mainstream media tend to lean to the left and say, where's the loyalty? The money shouldn't mean anything. And I'm on the side of the guys going to LIV. I mean, specifically with Phil. I mean, the guy was exiled from the PGA to begin with, lost all his sponsors. Where's he supposed to go?
Yeah.
What's he supposed to do? And then when these guys are just writing checks, but for Jay Monahan, the commissioner of PGA, to come out yesterday and say, we can't compete against these guys. that was a major admission, because some of us old timers are comparing this to WHA. Shoot, you can talk about XFL, USFL if you want. What folded those leagues? Lack of money. LIV doesn't have that problem.
Yeah.
So we're in some uncharted territory here that's a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and as long as they can play in the majors, you can understand why players are going to the money, to be honest with you. You're playing in half the events, you're still making way more money, and you can still play in the majors. So it's a tough, it's an interesting thing to see. And as long as the Masters and the U.S. Open and the Open let these players play, they're probably going to have no problem jumping ship.
Well, to quote Reg Dunlop in the movie Slapshot, that situation is about to change. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be able to dip their hands in both buckets for much longer.
Yeah.
There's no way that that's going to – I can't see that being allowed by the USGA, but I see where you're coming from. And they didn't see this coming. They did not see this coming. But I think if that check is big enough and you're getting into, what, 8-9 figures in some cases for these players, I don't think it's even going to matter about the majors. They're going to take the money. That's what that looks like. That's the way that it's going. But again, how can we sit and say it today?
Yeah.
Nobody seems to know.
Yeah. And there's still quite a bit of big names in the PGA. And until that changes, I think the PGA is going to be okay. But it'll be interesting to see where things go the next couple of years. Rod, we could do this all day, as you know. Appreciate the time, as always. We'll do this again very, very soon. But thanks for jumping on today.
Anytime, fellas. Thanks for calling. Have a good night.
You bet. There he is, Rod Peterson from the Rod Peterson Show, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 13-time Consumer Choice Award winners. Check them out for Dine In tonight, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. You can also give them a call, 403-248-3344, for your takeout and delivery needs. We'll take a break. Into hour number three we go. If you missed anything in hour two, don't forget you can find it on the podcast. Find the Big Show wherever you get your podcast.